Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Friday is an ATP day. Ask the Pros. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. You want to go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. Submit a question there. Listen later on. I might answer one of yours. And remember, O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. As promised, we are joined right now by a senior writer for Sports Illustrated and the MMQB. Jenny Vrentis is my guest. Jenny, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, good. Nice to visit with you. Let me start, Jenny, with that piece that you have up this morning that breaks down the NFL's punishment for Jameis Winston. Before we get into the specifics, I want to get your thoughts on the league's three-game suspension for him. When you first heard that, what was your initial reaction?
Surprise, because when the NFL rewrote its personal conduct policy in 2014 following the Ray Rice case, the goal was, you know, to have a establish a baseline, to establish consistency, to strengthen the policy. And that's when they set a baseline of 6 games for first-time offenders. Now, it allows for mitigating and aggravating circumstances, but I don't see any that apply in this case. I don't see any mitigating circumstances that apply. And certainly an aggravating circumstance is having a history of similar conduct before. And certainly Winston had allegations in college against him as well. So I was surprised that they didn't enforce the 6-game. This did not seem to be a case where you should lessen the baseline punishment. So I was surprised when they announced the number of games.
Jenny French is joining us. I mean, Jenny, to that point, the league's statement read that Jameis Winston touched an Uber driver, quote, in an inappropriate and sexual manner without her consent, end quote. So given the baseline standard for first-time offenders, under the league's personal conduct policy, it's a 6-game suspension. It would seem pretty clear that he would be in line for 6 games. So how did we get to 3?
Right. And the NFL statement yesterday offered no equivocation, right? It explicitly, very plainly stated that he touched her in an inappropriate and sexual way. And so I was surprised then to see equivocation in the punishment. It was the result of a settlement. They went from 6 to 3 talks between the players union and the NFL. But I just think when you allow for the baseline to be negotiated down in certain cases but not others, and don't give clear parameters as to why it was negotiated down, which that was not made clear, why it was cut in half. Perhaps it was because he cooperated with the investigation. He didn't push back. We've seen in other cases like Ezekiel Elliott and then, certainly a completely different thing, but with Tom Brady and the on-field, Deflategate. If someone pushes back, don't ever cut the suspension down. But I just, without a clear explanation of why the suspension was cut in half and why it would be warranted to cut it in half in this case, I think it's really undermines the policy.
Jenny Vrentis joining us. You know, your point about Tom Brady, and Jenny, I mentioned this before you came on, but is there not somebody in that league office who might say, listen, this is a really bad look that Tom Brady is getting a worse punishment for deflating footballs than Jameis Winston is for inappropriate behavior with a woman?
Well, I think it's apples to oranges in a sense of, like, there's certain policies for different things, and you know, that falls under one policy for integrity of the game, and this falls under the personal conduct policy. But listen, it's always awkward to assign a certain number of games missed for a serious off-the-field allegation like domestic violence and sexual assault. So you're never going to have a perfect formula for that. What's worth 3? What's worth 6? But that's where the personal conduct policy was supposed to say, you're a first-time offender, 6 games is a baseline. It was supposed to reduce the criticism, make the guidelines clearer, act as a strong deterrent. And because that 6-game standard is not, it's not really the rule. It's actually the exception when the 6-game standard is applied for the personal conduct policy violations. And that weakens a policy that was supposed to be corrected 4 years ago.
Right. And again, just to reiterate, coming out of the disaster that was the league's response to the Ray Rice situation, this personal conduct policy that they seem to be so proud of because of how tough it was supposed to be 6 games. So a few years on, what do you make of that policy and how it's been applied?
I think the problem when you undermine the policy is that, as I wrote in the column, you're sort of opening up for excusing and enabling bad behavior, right? You can compare behaviors. What is not as bad as the other? And that's not really fair to say grabbing her in the crotch isn't as bad as rape. Okay, but they're bad behaviors that are related, and it's not really okay to say one is less than the other. Then you start kind of talking about bad behavior in a way that makes some of it seem okay. And that's why I felt like the message sent with the Winston suspension is just, it's saying exactly that. Well, it's not bad enough to be a 6-game penalty. You know, this is a person who's had history of allegations against him, who's made lewd remarks in a cafeteria when he was in college. And so to give the benefit of the doubt, the person who's had issues in the past, this was really not the case to do that on.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, given this guy's history, the rape accusation at Florida State, the New York Times investigation that revealed a woman who went to counseling after a sexual encounter with Winston, I mean, is there a pattern here and a set of aggravating factors as opposed to mitigating factors?
I would argue that there are aggravating factors. Like you mentioned, you know, he wasn't charged for the rape in college. However, the woman who said that he raped her, she ended up receiving settlements in two lawsuits, one from the university and one from him. The one from the university was nearly $1 million, which speaks that it was mishandled. The New York Times investigation revealed that the police and the university didn't try very hard to see what happened that night. And then, yeah, there was a second woman who sought counseling after a sexual encounter with him, didn't rise to the level of anything reporting involving the police, but she felt uncomfortable enough. And after that, one of the assistant state attorneys in Tallahassee said that this seems to be a pattern rather than a single one-off, those two incidents taken together. So with that past history in college, then for this to come up, and then to allow his statement to say, you know, he hasn't been drinking, and then there were reports from multiple outlets, I think, that he'd indicated he might not have remembered parts of the night because he'd been drinking so much. That, again, is an excuse for behavior. So I find all of that frustrating, and I find the message that it sends confusing and not really what the strengthened personal conduct policy was intended to do in 2014.
Jenny Vrentis is our guest. Then what do you make of his apology? You saw that. What's your reaction to his apology?
Well, I think the thing that was frustrating about the words that he chose were he didn't expressly apologize for what the NFL investigation concluded that he did, which was touch the Uber driver in a sexual and inappropriate manner. He did not clearly apologize for that. And, you know, I think I also thought it was convenient, the report saying that when he spoke to investigators, he had said that there were parts of the night that he may not have remembered. He maintained his innocence, but said there might have been things I don't remember because I was drinking. However, when the BuzzFeed News story broke last November, sharing the story from the Uber driver and what she had immediately reported to her employer, Uber, who then removed him from the ride-sharing platform, his immediate response was to call the allegations false and say he absolutely did nothing inappropriate that night. So to me, it's kind of a convenient swing from saying I absolutely didn't do anything wrong to, oh, I don't really remember. So I don't get a sense of there's not any remorse expressed. And if the NFL's investigation is very clear that he engaged in wrongdoing, shouldn't we expect some kind of remorse especially if you're going to lessen a punishment?
Right. Once again, the question is, are you sorry for what you did, or are you sorry that you're in the position you find yourself in right now? Not only that, but what about that part of the statement where he talks about how he's matured over the past 2.5 years? And you hear the argument that, listen, the guy is still young, he's still learning. I know you've heard that argument. What do you make of that argument?
I think immaturity is different from wrongdoing, right? You know, if you're immature, you might drink too much with your friends and, you know, come to practice late the next day. That's immaturity. You know, hurting other people, that's a pattern of behavior that's come up multiple times now. And so maybe he has grown, and I certainly hope that's true. But I don't think that giving him a lesser punishment encourages that growth, encourages that change. I would argue that it discourages it, and it, you know, by continuing to offer some kind of excuse for bad behavior, that's really what got us to this point anyway.
Jenny Vrentis joining us for a few more moments. You know, as an example, Jameis Winston's 24, but he's still a few days older than Landon Collins, who is part of a group of New York Giants players who went to Puerto Rico earlier this summer to participate in relief efforts. You had a great piece about that trip last month. What did you make of what you saw when you first arrived in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking about it. It was really an eye-opening experience, you know, to see people who are, you know, living in a part of the United States still without power, still without running water, inconsistent running water. We went to a lot of rural parts of the island that are harder to get to. Some of the drives were very long and up in the mountains. And the players were working with AmeriCares, which works to help provide access to medical supplies and medical care for people, particularly in areas affected by poverty or disaster. And so I thought the players really went out of their way to let the people know that they weren't forgotten, which I think is so important, because when you've been without power for months on end and there's no end in sight, it's easy to feel forgotten. And many of them expressed that sentiment. So I thought that was, there was a lot of really meaning to those people, to have people come from New York, come from a football team, even if they weren't football fans. They appreciated the fact that people took the time to come visit them and to support their access to medicines. There, we met people who were starting a community clinic. The players helped them, you know, paint the clinic. They delivered supplies to some of these places that are basically oases in the middle of a rural area that's really still recovering.
And then in terms of Collins himself, he had surgery on his forearm a few weeks before that trip, but still went. When you spoke with him, why was it so important for him to be a part of that trip?
Yeah, he, you know, was a survivor of Hurricane Katrina. You know, both of his parents, their houses were affected by the storm. They were displaced. And he, driving through Puerto Rico, was saying he recognized the blue FEMA tarps that were over the roof, because that that similar tarp had been on his mother's house. So he had personal experience and hopes to launch a disaster relief charity focused on rebuilding homes later this year. So even though he broke his forearm, you know, even though he required the second surgery on it not long before the trip, it was important for him to go because it was really a personal cause for him, because he'd been similarly affected by a storm that kind of, and he knows what it was like to sort of not be sure as a young kid, like where you're going to live or when your community will be restored.
A senior writer for SI and the MMQB, Jenny Vrentis, joining us on the show once again. Jenny, always good to visit with you. Thank you so much. Nice job.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Have a great weekend. Thank you very much. Jenny Vrentis. All right, coming to the end of hour number one. We spent a lot of time in hour one talking about Jameis Winston and the league hitting him with a three-game suspension. Again, that baseline is six games. That code of conduct policy was implemented as a response to Ray Rice when the league butchered that situation so badly by only giving him two games. And the league was pretty happy with itself at that time. But as you look at the way they've used that policy, it's been really inconsistent. So how do you go from six games to three games? And her point was, it's apples to oranges when I mentioned Tom Brady. Maybe so. But the optics aren't. The optics are what the optics are. And the optics are terrible in that this guy got a four-game suspension, Brady, for deflating footballs. But Jameis Winston is getting a three-game suspension for sexual assault. It's like the worst optic ever. It's a bad, bad look, even if we're talking apples to oranges. So if you want to respond to any of that, do it.